What we are going to talk about today is a subject we have discussed before, but requires further analysis as world history unfolds. This subject is the reality of the haves and the have-nots, both in America and around the world. In order to understand this, you need to take out of your mind all the garbage that you were taught in American schools and the delusions of American imperialism that the American dream is here for everybody and you can be whatever you want to be, that lunatic American phrase, that there's unprecedented opportunity apparently only in America or better than any other country. Now, let's just get a number of things straight here. In terms of class mobility, all studies show that America has one of the lowest levels of class mobility in the industrialized world. So that's sheer nonsense. And let's just analyze the totally lunatic statement, you can be whatever you want to be in America. Okay, so suppose you want to be a billionaire. You can be a billionaire? Really? And suppose you want to be a multi-billionaire. You just become a billionaire. All it takes is hard work, a can-do attitude, positive attitude towards American society. Now, it's important to see these ideas for the lunatic garbage that they are. There are very evil aspects to these ideas. Part of these ideas are peddled to keep domestic peace. When the plutocrats built the world that they built in the 19th century, and in fairness, they were a much nicer group of people than the modern plutocrats, the modern Wall Street plutocrats, or the modern high-tech plutocrats, because at least the plutocrats of the 19th century built an industrial machine for the American people. The modern plutocrats have spent a good part of their time selling out the American people and destroying America's industry to set up plants overseas. However, America had among the worst levels of industrial violence of any modern state. So in order to keep the peace, all sorts of happy books were published about, you know, the American dream and so on and so forth. This is something that was fueled very much at the start and also was plugged into American nationalism by both the right and the left. The liberal internationalists, such as the loathsome and fraudulent Woodrow Wilson, like to put this in as a logical justification for America invading, conquering, murdering, torturing anybody who got in their way, and so on and so forth. So there was a bipartisan approach to that. We think it's extremely interesting that the leading author who promoted this idea, Horatio Alger, in the 19th century, was later exposed as a homosexual child molester. So I think that's kind of interesting. That sort of sums up a good part of the American dream. And there's a whole series of other aspects of people who peddled this sort of hucksterism. But it's important to see that this is lunatic trash and not real. Now, let's focus today on what's real in America. What's real in America is you have to look at constant dollar wages is the only way to analyze this, and we won't get into a detailed discussion of economic statistics, phony statistics, BS real statistics. That's for another lecture. But let's focus on the real statistic, which is average wages. All right, for the middle class, average wages peaked in about 1963-64. So for those people, the American dream came to an end at that point in time, okay? We are back to where they were in 1963-64. They peaked in 1973. And for lower classes, like the minimum wage, we're back to where we were in the late 1950s. So that's the reality. That's the reality. Now, it's a lot worse than that, though, because the current structure of American life and, to a certain extent, global life is based on, first, huge debts against the environment, unprecedented debts against the environment. In other words, the current so-called prosperity is based on unprecedented destruction of the environment. It's taking out a debt against the future. In America, particularly starting under Reagan, you began this enormous expansion of debt, which has been a means of balancing things that don't balance by borrowing from the future. This is not going to end well. Now, when we've had a series of intermediate crises in terms of this debt, the biggest one being the 2008 financial train wreck. And unfortunately, since then, that was largely solved by running up whole new levels of debt, both in America and around the world. That is obviously not a good situation either. So we come back to the element of the haves and the have-nots and the average person's life. Now, people are told that, and this goes back to the issue we're about to discuss, which is religion. People are told that there's something here for them, that their life here means something, and it's all going to be good for them. The problem is that when the bubble bursts, this creates a conflict between the haves and have-nots at home and the haves and have-nots on an international basis. If you look at the Democratic Party today, it's a great series of promises, health care, Green New Deal, billions, trillions for infrastructure, and so on. And a lot of these are all very worthy goals. There's a deafening silence. You can hear a pin drop. You can hear crickets of how exactly this is going to be paid for, other than vague ideas about taxing the rich. And we favor increases in taxes on the rich, but that's not going to come within 1,000 miles of paying for these things. Meanwhile, the Democrats have joined the Republicans in supporting a runaway campaign of imperialism and militarism, and that could dangerously escalate the already astronomical levels of military spending. So the previous Democratic consensus of cutting military spending does not exist today. And today, America is spending in constant dollars more on the military than ever before in history and outspending the next 7 nations combined. So it's obvious that this is not for defense. This is for imperialism. So getting back to the haves and the have-nots, people are going to be pitted against each other, you see. So somebody who wants student debt relief is going to be pitted against somebody who wants infrastructure spending, etc., 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 which will lead to social turmoil. At the same time, on an international level, countries are going to fight among themselves for the scraps for economic advantage. Of particular relevance is the U.S. economic relationship with China, which is the most important economic relationship in the world between the two world's largest economic powers. In terms of purchasing power parity, the Chinese economy is already larger than the American economy. However, in the case of China, both countries have big problems. The big story here is that the fairy tales of Clinton were just that. Fairy tales. The whole idea that American industry would be sent to China, which was a crazy idea from day one, and then all sorts of fairy tale industries here would sprout up out of the view, out of the blue in high tech and provide jobs. Well, they got destroying U.S. industry and shipping it to China. They got that part. They did a terrific job on that. Unfortunately, the rest of this was largely crap. So you have huge long-term structural deficits in the American-Chinese relationship. And while Trump deserves credit for at least recognizing the problem and trying to deal with it rather than denying it, his approach is very clumsy and very dangerous. One way or another, this is going to cause problems for both America and China. For example, if the American economy tanks, which it very likely will, that will have a big effect on millions of workers in China who will no longer have American consumers to sell to, and so on. So this is going to be a very tumultuous relationship. In conclusion, we need to look at the issue of psychology, of people's hope about their own lives, of people waking up in the morning and feeling their own lives have value. And we also have to deal with issues of public health relating to poisoning, the influence of chemicals, unsafe working conditions. When we say unsafe working conditions, we're not talking about just a factory or something like that. Probably the most unsafe working conditions in America are that great innovation of the post-war era, the sealed glass box as a place for people to work, known as modern office buildings. Now, in the old office buildings, you could open up the windows and actually stick your head out and get a breath of something. It might not be fresh, but it will at least something fresh air. The modern office buildings are all hermetically sealed, And they do get outside air, but it all comes through an internal ventilating system and so on. So that by its nature is very unhealthy. You don't have to be a genius. On top of that, America, unlike many other states, has no indoor air health regulations. So that's an issue right there. And people feeling that their life matters, their life has meaning. Now, when you think this thing through, we're going back in time to realities of the past and realities of the future. Realities of the past are struggles between the haves and the have-nots. That's why war has been an integral part of history. And by the way, genocide has been an integral part of history. The issue of genocide is not adequately understood because the good old-fashioned role of genocide was to force people off their crops, force people off their take away their livestock. Let's just explain that a little more clearly. In the pre-industrial world, the key time was the harvest, okay? The key time was the harvest. People had to wait until their crops were harvested to get their food. Now, say tribe A is attacked by tribe B before they can harvest their crops, and either their crops are burned or they are forced off their land. The tribe that got driven off its land is probably going to starve to death, all right? So there's de facto genocide right there. And that also relates to a gross undercounting of the genocide against Native Americans by the white imperialists, because the tribes that were driven off their lands, yes, a lot of them died of disease, but one of the reasons the disease was so horrendous was the starvation as they got separated from their livestock and their food stocks. That is a reality. So people psychologically this is already happening under Trump, are beginning to have questions about the meaning of their lives and so on. This paves the way for religion and religious cults or para-religious cults. Now, what we are talking about in terms of religious cults is when you think of, some people think of cults of Charles Manson or something like that, and those indeed were cults, but we're thinking much more of somebody taking a traditional religion, Christianity, Islam, and reinventing it for political purposes. And we see this all around with the radical Islam and radical Christianity and radical Hinduism and radical Buddhism all around the world. This is already happening, and this will continue to grow. So that's a win-win for people where they can find greater meaning in their life. At the same time, they can see a political resolution of apparent political resolution of the problems that afflict their daily life. So as the situation deteriorates, the coming totalitarian leaders are not going to be as stupid as the communists were to have an atheist point of view. That was a huge minus. The new totalitarian leaders are going to have a religious point of view, and they're also not going to be dumb enough as to having a dumbbell economic system like the Soviet Union. You see a portent of the coming totalitarian world orders in China, with the exception of the religious aspect. That's the great Achilles heel of China. And that will, how that gets resolved is not clear. When the American economy gets into a great crisis, that will also spill over into China, and how the Chinese government handles that is going to be very interesting. We predict they will handle it, A, with greater repression, B, with greater nationalism and anti-Americanism. So these are the factors you need to keep in mind. Do understand that this is about the haves and the have-nots. As people struggle against each other in a world where debts come due and can't be paid, a world where people are being poisoned by environmental poisons, and a world where the overall environment is becoming increasingly stable. As we've said before, history remains the same, and this will have the same result as it's had in every era of history. Get all the red, white, and blue garbage out of your head. History remains the same. America is a prisoner of historical events, just like every other nation. In fact, America is really sort of a case study of what not to do as it gets more and more revealed of its massive internal problems. So what will be coming is the figure of the emperors, the new Caesars, the totalitarian order, who will be welcomed as saviors by the people to come. But this will be a sorting out of the haves and the have-nots. In terms of the Green Revolution, in terms of the unstable nature of industrial agriculture, the haves and the have-nots are going to be a game of death. So a lot of people are going to not make it. That's how this thing is going to be sorted out. And very interesting research has come up recently about the genocide against the Native Americans leading to a certain amount of global cooling, and the mass murder of people of China by Genghis Khan's armies also leading to a certain amount of global cooling. So the various political plans hatched by the Western elites are going to be completely inadequate to stop global warming, but the carnage to come actually could put a dent in it. So you will see, I guess you could call it something bright up ahead in terms of that. But again, you need to think in terms of the haves and the have-nots and how this is sorted out. Insofar as there's any hope for a peaceful resolution, we need to have frank talk about the haves and the have-nots, not fairy tale talk about how everybody's going to have a wonderful time. That's where we need to go. That's what we're going to try to encourage by educating people about the dimensions of the crisis. But like that young lady in Sweden, the 15-year-old girl who protested global warming, we're not optimistic. We have very little hope in the current Western elites. We see these people as evil and morally bankrupt and cowardly. So the more likely scenario is the return to an eternal timescale as Caesars come to power and there's a bloody sorting out of the haves and the have-nots. Out of that will come a new order. It could be a total apocalypse, but out of the ashes of the current situation will come a new order as the world returns to nature's laws. This is the end of this lecture.